Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The main team.
Ed Jim.
With guest co-host,
Dragonall.
I need cuffy number two.
Only a number two, you slacker. No, I'm kidding.
I'm a bigger.
What?
It's not just a problem with that.
Well, if that's a bigger, that's your problem, not mine.
You called even getting your hand around it.
That is a terrible juxtaposition. Thanks, Phil.
I'm talking about holding coffee cups. What are you guys talking about?
Welcome. Welcome to Polycast 228. And I'm joined today with Dan Quick.
Ribbit.
Oh, very clever. We got the Me Team. Me, I Team?
Greetings to all my citizens, and it's the main team.
All right, and Maka Hula La La La.
You make Mackie sound even more exotic. I like this.
Well, he's keeping up the long tradition of people not pronouncing my username right, so hey.
Well, I see Lua in there, and all I think is scripting, so I...
Nerd.
Yeah, pot kettle mush there, Dan.
I'm a cool guy, though.
We are zero. Oh, that's all I have on my list here.
Is this a G in a bottle?
Oh, man, that's a slight, too. Look at that. Jeans and Jins, really?
Oh, I see that Jin down there.
I just thought you meant wanted to be a regular co-host on the show, and since Imagine is the least senior on the show, he'd be the first out, so you'd taken his place, and I didn't have to mention him. That's what I thought you were doing.
Hey. Oh, I saw that. I missed Matt. Yeah.
Wasn't I supposed to take you guys out so that I end up getting the longest co-host? I thought that was the plan.
Yeah, how's that going?
Yeah, how is that going? Wait, oh, it's not.
I don't know.
But plus, our game, Civilization 6, or 6-3, it just came out. I mean, I got 6-6
out. We're just doubling everything?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
All right, Brad Wardell, Stardock CEO, announces Civilization 6. There's a headline for you.
Civ 6. Got so bored, we're pulling the Microsoft, just skipping a couple of versions.
Yeah, no, what we would call it the Civilization 10 if we were doing that.
Oh.
So, you're just trying to catch
up. He announced Civ 6 and Civ 6.
Yeah, what I'm saying is Brad announced Fraxis and 2K Games Civilization 6.
Yeah,
that would be awesome, actually, have someone from one game company announce the title of another game company's next title. That, actually, that would be impressive.
Yeah, there's going to be a Civilization 6 at some point.
Yeah, a wildly popular heavy sales title in a long-running series that people will probably buy again. It's a safe bet, yes.
Nope, they're done. That's it.
Yeah.
Like 5 months enough.
Good. Even like 10 years from now, come on, sister. Nope. Civ 5 was perfect. We're not doing another one.
Yeah, right. I think they like money.
Yeah, most people like money.
Sure. Yeah, the question is how many more expansions we'll get versus...
Well, yeah, that's a realistic question. Other than will there be a Civ 6, is how long until they are done milking the DLC for other stuff.
Well, I think either way, if and when Civilization 6 is announced, you will respond to those threads, Brad, and you'll be like, called it.
Yeah.
I knew, you know what? I knew it because Civilization 6 years ago. I was way ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to use this time to say about Civilization 7.
You know what the real question is, though? When they do the 6, will it still be Roman numerals, or will they go over to integers now?
No, it'll be.
This will really mess with people.
Yeah, it really mess with people.
Is that 4 or 6? I don't know. You got a V and an I. They got it backwards.
If that needs one thread, it needs 10. Isn't a culture victory redundant in Civilization 5 is the question.
Sure.
Posted by Ruler of the Hex.
Ooh, scary. I like Hexing rituals, personally. I approve.
To succeed culturally, you need a high-tech rate, good faith output, and tall cities. Realistically, these are all values represented in a science victory. Culture victories don't differ much from SVs, with the main difference being specialist focus. Of course, SVs being science victories. But if culture victories barely change from science victories, aren't they redundant?
You know, like, mass linking scientists to bulb techs in science victories?
You
still have specialist focus either way, too.
But you also use lots of scientist specialists to mass bulb the culture techs in the late game.
Yeah.
You're just going a slightly different part of the tech tree.
No.
Basically, the answer is yes and no. If you're looking at it purely from a tech point of view, then yes, it's actually culture and diplomacy are actually the two very redundant ones, because they're literally exactly one tech off. In culture, you go to this tech. In diplomacy, you go to that tech. They're side by side.
Pretty different win conditions.
Well, yeah, but if you take it from a purely science form of view, then yes, you need to play it both the exact same. It's just that instead of generating culture and tourism and collecting things, you're collecting city-states and tech path-wise, how many scientists you need, how you play. Yeah, it's all basically the same. Now, that all said, you do have all the whole tourism thing and the very different setup with all the great works and everything, so there is actual mechanics that are separate from the science victory if you put away the fact that you just need massive amount of science.
And for completeness sake, we are of course talking about the culture victory introduced in Brave New World, not the initial culture victory in Vanilla Civ 5.
But plus our game, Gladys Civilization 3, it just came out, it has culture flipping, so you actually build up your culture and it's a completely distinct tech tree. So then you build a cultural star basis to expand your culture into new hexes and sort of take over. I'm wondering how much of that will fall into, because Civilization 4 had that, and that was a nice mechanic where you were culture-flipping other civilizations.
Yeah, a fan favorite.
Mm. I don't know if that counts as cultural victory in as much as the old-style conquest or whatever the take X percentage of the map.
Domination.
It used to be domination or whatever. I mean, depends on the game. Depends on what it's called. I don't know if that's really cultural, though. If you do that, you can just go conquer everybody, and then it's like, I've got all the space.
Well, no, that was not really thing to have, like, a Cold War. Like, you know, you're pressuring tiles, but military was much more efficient in any game I've played than that. The culture victory in 4 was just to get 3 cities over X cultural growth value.
Yeah. But that's, like, these things all tend to just get same basic mechanic, but just change names in various games to get pushed to a different name for victory. But an actual culture victory really shouldn't be aggressively militaristic in taking over the world, unless you're stealing people's stuff, like in Civ 5. Like in Civ 5, stealing people's great works to help your culture victory.
Although it is one of the faster ways to win it is to beat everyone down so they can't defend themselves.
Well, I was even going to say, I have not pursued a culture victory in Brave New World, and I tried that in Vanilla Civ 5 and got quickly bored with it. And I hate to make this analogy because I love domination victories in Civ 5, but I kind of link them together in the sense of, would you like to eliminate AI? Because if you eliminate AI in domination, then you take over the map, you've got more territory, but if you eliminate AI for culture victories, then hey, my culture is more dominant because guess what? There's one less, and another less, and another.
Yeah, it's a bit of a problem on the design side where going for one victory condition sort of means that you're already headed towards a couple others at the same time, or using the others will get you to the one. It's good that there's multiple victories, obviously, because obviously different ways to play is a good thing, but when all those ways to play kind of get amalgamated based on good strategy, that's where the designs start breaking down.
You heard it here first, listeners. Imagine it's advocating for a return of the Apostolic Palace victory. The Apostolic Palace is one of the most broken things in Civ 4, like, ever.
Ever.
Just complete trash. Like, you could win on deity with one city if you set it up properly. But, like, while you're, like, 30 techs behind everyone else. You win a diplomatic victory because you have no opponents running against you. Thumbs up.
Yep, a.k.a. the religious victory.
Yeah.
And to me, in Civilization 5, you can still accomplish that, only that's through using the religion mechanic, which actually you could use to support any number of quote-unquote formal victory conditions, but
if you're behind, you can buy out a bunch of city-states and still get diplomatic if the AI doesn't kill them all.
Or, you know, the whole nuking people to death and then accidentally getting a diplomatic victory.
Well, yeah, although I like Civ 4's version of that better.
Yeah.
That's still a thing.
It's still a thing in Civ 5. I managed to do that as Venice.
Yeah.
By accident. So I think what it comes down to is, if there are going to be multiple victory conditions, but they should not all rely on some core mechanic.
Yeah, I agree.
Or at least not all rely on the exact same core mechanic, like in Civ 5, it's all science. The majority of it should be off mechanics and should have the game be able to do many things.
Yeah, and then you have to balance between investing in that victory condition versus investing in science and military and staying alive.
Yeah.
And I like that factor better. I think that's something that Civ 4 got right with culture victories, despite that they were also boring, like vanilla Civ 5 culture victories. But you did have a distinctive thing, because you would switch your slider to culture, and as a result, your science tech would be miserable. So if you went all in on culture, you had to be pretty sure you're going to get there before you got killed.
Well, as long as you don't need the science to get other culture.
Before, you would get all the stuff you needed to win at an optimal speed about halfway into the tech tree. That really lasts. Mm-hmm. I would say more like a third of the way into the tech tree. As soon as you hit liberalism, you know, maybe you would get printing press, but that's it. But then you're done. You stop teching if you want to get it as fast as possible. But that's assuming you don't get killed.
Yeah.
So even up to that point, then, science is significant.
Yeah. The majority of the game, really, you would be pursuing culture then, rather than science.
Yeah, but maybe that's part of the problem, is because they have to use science to open new culture stuff, or new policies, or new other things. So maybe you can use culture and have its own stuff.
Well, yeah, but
or some other mechanic.
The whole point is that you're investing into something costly that doesn't contribute to your defense or science. So you're taking resources that you have presently and putting them into something that can make you win, but it's also risky because you're pursuing something off the path.
Yeah.
I think you have to have at least a little science tie in there. Otherwise, you can just stay up in science and push culture all the time, and you'll win. And then everyone else will do it, too. So it just turns into a culture versus military standoff thing.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how it's built. I would like to see some stuff that don't require always build the tech tree.
There I agree with you, for certain. Because if you play the same way every time, with small variations at the end, there's less replayability there than if you had, like, unique gameplay mechanics for each route, for sure.
Yeah.
Tyler J89, how would you rank the unique luxuries in Civ 5? He says, you know, Salt is considered the master race, and calendar luxuries are generally disliked. Huh? What are your favorite and least favorite luxuries?
I read it the exact same as you, Mackie. Like,
what?
Calendar luxuries are generally disliked.
What?
I think what he meant to say is that the luxuries you can get sooner are better from a tech prioritization standpoint, I guess.
It sort of depends, because some people in the Reddit thread actually were putting the trapping-based resources above calendar. I don't like the trapping-based ones.
Yeah. No. Well, if you have, like,
bad tech
eight of them, then you can go Goddess of the Hunt. But other than that...
Yeah.
If I'm stuck in the tundra, I'd absolutely love to have some of these resources, but then it's like, I'm in the tundra.
Yeah. It's like... Let's get bigger.
It depends. Like, some tundra starts can just ruin you, but yeah, sometimes you have decent land around, and your capital is really good with the trapping resources, so...
Yeah, you get tons of trapping resources in the tundra.
I will distinguish between it's a tundra start and I have tundra, I guess.
I mean, it's because in the first post they're talking about salt, marble, pearls, and gold, silver gems, which are all easier to get because either you just pick up mining or sailing, which mining you're going to pick up anyway. But calendar's not that far of a diversion, especially if you want to go grab philosophy to start your national college, so...
I would certainly hope you'd want to grab philosophy.
Yeah.
NC is kind of paramount to the game, so yeah.
And I guess it's a question of what calendar resources, because obviously not all are created equal. And some suck.
Yeah.
Apparently they hate tiles that are pure gold tiles. In this case, we're talking about incense on a naked desert, but...
Incense gets the goddess. Incense gets the goddess and a religious building, monasteries. And if it's on the desert, you have this wonderful little thing called the Petra.
And also desert folklore, you can be getting things, too.
And if you happen to be a Civ that can do funky stuff in deserts.
Yeah, I don't know. Naked deserts that aren't resources, I still don't like Morocco.
I'll blatantly ignore anything that's straight up no desert, or just flat desert with nothing on it. As much as possible, anyways.
Well, not just incense, but even also wine. I mean, if you don't pick up the Goddess of the Festival Pantheon, plus one culture and plus one faith, there is the backup for all of these plantation-based resources, which would be oral tradition for plus one culture.
Yeah, apparently they also don't like plus one culture from plantation.
Yeah, we have a little backup in our story about incense being not so bad, particularly with Pantheon and monasteries. But they're also saying that they thought that sugar would be better if it gave plus one food and plus one gold instead of two gold.
Oh, I'm sure they could mess with the yields on a lot of them. That's really where some of the luxuries are slightly imbalanced. Like, there's a number of luxuries, especially calendar-based, that have a lot of religious pantheons associated to them. So, you know, oh, I got this one. There's my pantheon. And I get cool stuff with that. Whereas you get something like sugar, and it's like, yay.
That's where I can see the trapping stuff. Like, if you happen to get, like, trapping resources that are food resources and the trapping luxuries together, then it is a pretty strong start. Because you have those two food, one hammer tiles, like, surrounding you. So you have a good fast settler there. You can take Goddess of the Hunt, and it's a lot of food. Like, 8 food in your capital or 6 food in your capital is a lot. You do get those starts here and there, so I can understand going that. Like, if you get a clump of it. Yeah, just an ivory or two. I don't see it.
Well, ivory's got the most gold output. It's a really high gold output tile.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad tile, but I don't know that it's...
Plus, if you don't have a horse, ivory counts for the stable.
So yeah.
You can get... for base stuff. Trapping is just in the wrong tech path for me, 9 tenths out of 10.
Same.
The problem, I think, when some people start hating on the calendar luxuries, and you can see it all throughout the thread, is that if a calendar luxury shows up in a marsh, that's just I'm never touching that until, like, medieval era.
Settle on it.
Yeah, or settle on it. Or if it shows up in a jungle, then you need to go deep in the tech to get rid of the jungle. Or if it's in a forest, you have to go, blah, blah, blah. Basically, it's like you need multiple techs to actually improve it. And because if it's on a marsh or a jungle, it takes forever to improve it. So you just don't, unless you have to.
Or you've stolen, like, 6 workers.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the calendar-based luxuries, I would give cotton the edge simply because it will appear on grassland.
Yeah, there's a few good ones like that. But cotton doesn't do... much, and you don't get much of a yield out of it. And that's part of the problem. It's not really balanced in that respect, at least as good as it could be. Any luxury that does not have an associated building or religious pantheon should have a higher base yield comparative to those.
Yeah, cotton gets, like all the calendar-based ones, with the plus one culture from plantations, but that's not specific to cotton, as opposed to, say, wine and incense. Oh, Goddess of Festivals, plus one culture and plus one faith for wine and incense.
Yeah, and this cotton at least will tend to spawn on clean grassland, so you're not having to wait for bronze working or stuff to chop it down and go over a jungle that way. You can use it sooner.
That's not an insignificant factor. That's pretty important, because you have it that many turns sooner.
Yeah.
The luxuries are perfectly balanced, but in terms of resources, I think Civ 5 is probably the best out of the Civs, at least since they became unique. Like, okay, you go back to like Civ 1, 2 days where you didn't get much other than your strategic whatever.
Yeah. I'm sorry, why is it that when Phil said that, I immediately thought of Civ 3 and Saltpeter? Why? Why did I do that?
Because I still have like trauma from not getting it when you get it.
Civ 3 and 4 are really bad with the resources.
Yeah.
The difference in start quality was just abysmal. You can still get screwed on a start in Civ 5, but it's nothing like the previous games.
And in the thread, there does not seem to be a lot of focus on citrus at all, which surprises me. Because of its tile yield, okay, yeah, you hit it at calendar, but then you tap into the Sun God Pantheon for plus one food. But citrus can also appear on grassland, and so that food growth so early on, okay, yeah, you've got to go to calendar. But as you said before, you're going to go to calendar.
Yeah.
You want to get to philosophy. It's not that far behind. I think that's really powerful because food translates into greater science output because you have more population, and your cities grow, and then you have more production and more gold. And more this, and more that, and it just snowballs. So I think citrus is a strong second right behind salt.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're stuck in a jungle and you have citrus around you, it's actually worth not improving it for a while because you get more food from that tile for quite some time without actually improving it.
Oh, but you do need the happiness to grow using...
Yeah, you just hope that you get a different luxury or one that's not directly in jungle.
Although if you do need the happiness and you've got multiple citrus, you can improve just one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Leave the others alone.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Citrus is actually pretty good. Marble is pretty high on the list for most people, but I don't know. I mean, marble's nice, but I don't really push over for masonry unless I have a lot of stone.
Yes, because then stone circles plus two faith from quarries, which of course is the stone and marble. I think a lot of people might put a little more stock in marble than maybe we are because of the production bonus and building ancient and classical wonders.
Yeah, I don't do that.
But I don't do that either. So, you know what I do? I like to conquer the cities that have those wonders. That's what I do. So you can go ahead and build them for me. That's great. I mean, if the production boost was greater early on in the game, I mean, 15%, it was like 25% when, you know, but that, I mean, that would just be ridiculous. I mean, I'm glad it's only 15. Don't get me wrong. When I was ranking these, I ended up with 17. I mean, I would put marble at 6. It's very good, but it's not better than adult, citrus. We mentioned wine and incense. And then gold and silver. I put that right between citrus and wine and incense. All right, so you get the output. It's accessible at mining. You get the mint. So then each source of gold and silver gives you plus 2 gold with no maintenance cost, of course. And then you tap into religious idols, which, just like Goddess of Festivals, is going to give you plus 1 culture and plus 1 faith.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I will, like, jump all over gold and silver. Early game, those things just crank up the money.
And, of course, when I think about cranking out money in Civilization IV, I think of gems, which, in the case of Civ 5, I mean, I put that kind of right before marble. It's accessible at mining. It taps into the Tears of the Gods pantheon. There's plus 1 faith for each, as well as pearls. But it is typically, you often find it in jungle. Mm. It's like, well.
That's the settle on it plan.
Yeah. Pearls, which is, again, with the Tears of the Gods pantheon. Okay, there's crab and whales. They're nice, but then again, it's kind of like, okay, other than plus 1 production on fishing boats, which is Goddess of the Sea, I mean, that's nice, but...
If you're coastal and you don't have much land, that's godsend.
Yes.
Although that's kind of making the best of a not ideal position in that regard.
Yeah, I put it like smack dab in the middle of everything.
Here's the one fun thing is that the water and resources are always far more powerful than the land ones, generally, depending. It's just a problem that one jerk wandering around all of a sudden starves out your entire city because you can't work a single tile.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Oh, wait, and the supremely high cost for a freaking one-shot workboat.
Yes. Oh, I don't think we mentioned truffles.
Truffles are good-ish.
Yeah,
they're not bad. And it depends how much clumping you have on the trapping resources.
Yeah.
The comment from TylerJ89 about salt is considered the master race. I think that's a bit strong. Salt is strong, don't get me wrong.
It's the master of them all.
Yeah, I mean, I go right for it. As soon as I see salt, that's where I'm going.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's top. When I hear master race, I hear, like, they're at 100, and second and below are, like, 50 in terms of strength. I don't think it's that strong.
What's better?
Well, you can take a crappy plane start and turn it to actually a decent start if you've got salt.
Or desert.
Mm-hmm.
You get 3 or 4 salt.
Yeah.
You snap mining, and all of a sudden you're cranking out settlers at 3 pops, as if you were another city cranking out settlers at 5 or 6. You're just, like, wrecking the place. And you throw a pantheon on top of that.
Boom.
Okay, yes, there's Earth Mother, plus 1 faith from each. And I think Salt's biggest advantage is how ridiculously common it is on the map as compared to everything else.
Also, the yields are ridiculous.
No, it's that strong of the yield early on.
The sheer amount of food and production you get out of it, really, it should have been pick one or cut it in half.
There's a fine line between perfect balance and conveying that it is a historical game. The thing is that being near Salt was a huge deal. Right? I mean, salt is way more important than gems or incense or wine or any of the other stuff that's going to be, you know, near you.
It's a fair point, but it's a question of extent.
That's the thing. The way luxuries work, it's either all grouped together in one spot and no one else gets salt, or all the city-states get it because then you accidentally got that. But the problem is the distribution of the luxuries are not set up in a historical way, whereas all around the planet, there's salt. But in the game, no. And that's where you have to pull away from the historical side of it and go, okay, it doesn't have to be perfectly balanced as in every choice is equal because then the game is boring. Because if every choice is equal, then there's no real choice. But they need to be balanced against each other for the strength of each of those choices. So stuff like, you know, wine and dye and stuff like that, well, that all pushes towards the religious side. The culture, that was big for that stuff, and especially gold and silver and gems. They give pushes to different mechanics or different areas of the game, but doesn't make one choice way more powerful than the other, then that's okay. Proper forms of balancing, not blending it out.
Yeah, you just want to avoid situations where one resource is so much stronger or so much more useless than the others that it starts becoming game-deciding on its own. Yeah, I referenced the Sith Force starts earlier because of how bad the disparity was. Like, if you got a corn and two gems versus a Plains Hill sheep and an ivory or something, the difference in your start position was just incredible. It got to the point where somebody who was like twice as good at me would lose if they got the latter start, if I just rushed them, because they wouldn't be able to handle it. Like, that's horrible. Athenaeum, do Maya have the biggest religion advantage? I occasionally play with my friend whose favorite Sith is the Maya, and he always seems to have the most influential religion. Well, this is a surprise. This is because he rushes theology. You know, so he can get long count started ASAP, takes the prophet as his first great person, and then usually gets a great engineer 6 or 7 turns later and rushes one of the deer. Well, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And that's probably not a good idea for him to waste his GE on Borobudur, but I figure that even without wasting his GE on it, he could probably build it before anybody else anyway. Most people haven't found their religion by the time they get theology, and because the Maya have a shrine replacement that gives them +2 science and +2 faith instead of 1, which gives them even more of a religion advantage, they can research slightly faster than most other Sith and thus reach theology even faster. So he's one of those, like, who else can compete with the Maya if they are the strongest religion Sith? And, you know, you go through the thread, you'll have a few Sith that are pointing out that if they get sufficiently lucky, they can be competitive with the Maya. But the Maya are pretty strong in religion, yes. And if somebody, like, sells their soul on religion, then they're probably going to have a more influential religion.
Yeah, I mean, do the Maya have the biggest religion advantage? I don't think so. Do they have a religion advantage? Yes. And just like with any advantage, whether it's religion or culture or what have you, it's also how well it's played, whether or not you're going to realize that. So, yeah, Maya very good. But when he says, is there any other Sith that could possibly compete with the Maya? I mean, the first Sith that comes to mind is Ethiopia. And then come the Celts. And then there's also this Byzantium civilization.
Well, I don't know if they have an advantage, per se.
Lucky Spain and lucky Celts are also mentioned as.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the question of, does the player rush theology? If they do, and they get there early enough, yes, they get lots of stuff from long count. And yes, they can use that stuff to use great engineers to spam stuff. I'm not exactly against the idea of wasting a GE on Borobudur or any of the other theology-related wonders, because there's like 3 of them. Because if no one else actually has a religion at a point, it's really, really easy to spread your religion.
Yeah, and it gets widespread very quickly because there's no competition. If you place those missionaries well, you can get a lot of presence on the map from them.
Mm-hmm. And if you plow through all the stuff and you can enhance your religion properly, you're just wrecking the place before others can even get started. The problem is you have to get to the theology really quickly and hit the early long counts, and that's the hard part. As Brad points out, the earliest one is turn 52, or at least the earliest one that matters, because you're not getting to theology before turn 52. 52, 62, 72. Every 10 turns, you're getting a new great person.
On standard speed.
Yeah, on standard speed, and blah, blah, blah. And then it gets longer. So, you know, the faster you make it to theology, the better you're going to be. But the problem is, if you really push theology that way, that means you blatantly ignored most of the text tree. And if this is a multiplayer game, and you have the Maya, and you know they went theology, they have absolutely no units.
Yep.
Or much of anything else. So somebody could just wander along and go, thank you for the wonders.
Yeah, you were tasty, nom.
Although, like, the one he has is thread structured. Like, this doesn't come across to me as a really competitive PvP game.
No.
Because, obviously, if you have somebody rushing religion, rushing wonders, that kind of stuff, if you're actually in a competitive match with this person, the first thing that comes to mind is, I'll just kill him.
Yeah.
But he's not talking about that. He just wants to know, like, if anyone can compete on religion.
Although somebody else actually did point that out. Yeah, if all this fails, well, rush.
Mm-hmm.
When he says, does the Maya have the biggest religion advantage, or does Civilization X have the biggest religion advantage, that's in and of the civilization itself. And just to add in here, I don't think you can avoid bringing into the question of the starting location of all civs, which actually ties a little bit back into the previous topic, because maybe you're not a civ that has a particular religion advantage, but perhaps you have a fair bit of gold and silver around you, or desert.
Or a faith wonder, or a faith animal wonder.
No, not even that. It's like you want to get it snowball started, run into 2 city-states of the religious form.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look, it's a pantheon!
That's true.
And then there's also natural wonder considerations as well.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to be Spain to just use one of the good natural wonders to just transfer religion. Yeah, there's lots of reasons why you should ignore the map when it comes to who has an advantage, but then the map shows up and says, natural wonder, here you go.
Exactly. Although maybe on average the Maya do have the biggest advantage, because they can get some of this too, and then they're even further ahead on it.
I think the Maya's biggest advantage is the ability, if you get to theology fast enough, you can grab a great engineer and crank out one of the wonders.
Yeah.
Or, you know...
Just getting great people that fast that early.
Yeah. You can use that to get other stuff. So say you take a great engineer first, pop your Hagia Sophia, get your free great prophet. A couple turns later, you get your next long count, and you take a second prophet. And all of a sudden, you have a fully formed religion in a few turns from nothing.
Yep, enhanced and everything.
And then you go and you finish liberty and finish piety and...
More great prophets. Now to spread this really strong religion that I got before the rest of you...
The plus science per shrine sort of just makes me want to go really wide. And if I happen to trip over theology at some point, that's okay. Most of the things that do have advantages, they have advantages more in the how you use the religion or how much faith you can get versus actually getting the religion. Because getting the religion kind of a kludge for most people if there's natural wonders on the map or religious city-states.
Or if nothing else, then you push for pottery and get your shrine constructed or bought.
That's the worst possible way to do it.
But that may very well be what you have to do if you don't have a particularly strong civ with an advantage for religion or a start that's going to give you an advantage. You think, well, all right, I guess we got to get into the race somehow.
Speaking about races, so how much production do you need for the World Fair and International Games? This is kind of a two-parter.
Yep.
So first part is one person actually just wanted to know how much production you actually need because he overdoes it a lot, usually allocate too many resources, i.e. lots of production for multiple turns, and go well beyond the production required to actually win for the World's Fair, which is usually 50% or less if there's actual people producing for it as well.
Yeah, it's easy to go over.
It's really, really easy to go
over. Oh, dear, yes.
And so this thread's pretty short, but generally the answer apparently is whatever you need for silver. So World's Fair is 350 hammers. You need a minimum amount of 350 hammers times the number of civs in the game. That's nice, because then you can at least mathematically find out how much you need to push in. Of course, this all assumes standard speed, but yeah, part of the discussion actually gets into, well, you could choose to stop once you put in enough, but then lots of other civs are going to get the bronze and the silver because there's all that extra production space. So why not just keep plowing through and then you're the only one who gets any bonuses as a thought line?
Well, exactly. It's not just about what you gain by getting to that particular bonus, but what you deny to somebody else.
Yeah.
So it's like a double whammy.
Yeah, it could be a good gain. So the first 50% of your production is all about what you gain. The other 50% of the production is all about what you deny. And some of the denial stuff is good, like free social policies and extra happiness. Not having the AI get extra happiness when you're trying to jam your tourism down their throats could be useful.
That's one of my, them getting extra happiness is the best. They always manage to have all the culture they're going to need.
But that's what the great musicians are for.
Yeah, we would rather the AI not get happiness from this because they already get their bonuses. They don't need more of anything, really.
So the flip side of it, and the much longer thread, second thread was referenced from the first thread, so if I assume this is a two-parter.
Yep.
A trick for building world projects such as the World Fair, to find out how much you're putting in versus what the AIs are putting in, you just hover over the World Wonder building icon. If you look at it every turn as you go, then you can find out how much you're contributing versus other people. And since you know your production amount, you know how much you're putting in, so it's a question of once you know how much you have and how much the World Congress is actually worth, then you can find out what your percentage is versus others. This is fairly straightforward. If you don't put anything towards the World Congress or like to the project and it goes up by 1%, then you also know that very few other people are bothering to put anything in there. But if it goes up by 40%, well, yeah.
Yeah.
You already lost a turn.
If it goes up by that much, you probably also lost.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yep. So you can basically track how fast others are putting production in versus yourself. So you can see if it's hitting 50% pretty quick, you're the only one putting production in, or there's a bunch of AIs putting a very little amount in, then the question really comes down to, and this comes up in the thread, do you want to just stop when you hit 50% and say, okay, I did mine, and then have to wait like 10, 20 turns for everybody else to put the production in to finish it, or do you just want it done so you can actually get the bonuses right away? Because more bonuses sooner is always better.
I think you would generally want it sooner. I guess it's a question of if you decide to stop putting production into it and you wait those 10 or 20 turns, what have you gotten out of it yourself? What have you then been able to construct in your cities that are no longer going towards the World's Fair or the International Games? And are you farther ahead? Construct some more military units, you know, because you don't have a lot of gold to buy them, so then that means you're going to be able to go on a rampage sooner. And, oh, look at that. Did you just get something from the World's Fair? That's nice, squish. But beyond those situational things, I think the sooner the better.
Mm. Yeah, it depends on what you're trying to do. Like, if you're trying to win culture victory and you have a choice of getting plus 100% tourism or plus 100% culture now versus letting all the AIs or other players build up their infrastructure, cultural infrastructure that is, over that next 20 turns, yes, you would like to finish that faster so that you can break them quicker.
And I think one thing that maybe some players might get too obsessed about, because it's an easy check to do, okay, World's Fair, it has passed in the World's Congress, excellent, or International Games, or even the Space Station later on. I'm going to go to my demographics, and I'm going to see, where do I rank on the production? Oh, look at that. I rank second, or I rank whatever, and then you start basing your decisions from that. Just because a civilization has considerable production infrastructure does not mean they're going to put it towards it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a nice initial check, but like, I often do that more in terms of, do I want to propose the World's Fair at this point? Just because if I know I can be in the, okay, it depends on the number of civs on the map, but if I can get myself into the top third of production of civs on the map, then if all the other civs are going towards it, then I figure I have a reasonable chance that I'm going to place. Maybe it's not first, obviously that would be ideally, but at least get myself the silver or bronze.
Yeah, it sort of depends. You could be the worst production person in the world, but if everybody else is spending all their production on units or buildings or something, then you can just sneak right in there and easily gain something. So I don't think there's ever a reason not to do it, unless, of course, you're at that first turn thing where you're like, I put all my production into it, and it's up to 40%. Yeah, okay, maybe not. Maybe it's time to walk away if you're really bad on the production, that is.
Of course, in order to be able to construct the World's Fair International Games or Space Station, it needs to pass as a resolution. Now, sometimes a civ won't vote at all, either yay or nay. But if you know how much of civilizations voted nay against it, if it ends up passing, is there any kind of correlation between them voting yay or nay and determining whether or not they're actually going to start constructing it? I'm assuming not, at least not that we can measure.
I would have to look at the code. I have a feeling that they're just opportunistic. Like, they may not want it, because they're not going for, say, culture or whatever, so they don't want somebody who is going for culture to have it, but I think they'd still be opportunistic if the production was available.
Well, I know I sure the hell I would, even if I didn't vote for it, because I'm prioritizing something else. Well, it passes. Oh, well, I voted against it, so I'm not going to play. Oh, hell no, I'm playing.
Yep.
Let's do this.
Yeah, because the last couple of times I've had, like, World Fair and things come up in games that single-player games I've been playing, I've seen most AIs, once they were involved in a war and didn't have a lot of production, at least put some hammer towards it.
Yeah, pretty sure they're just opportunistic. I don't think you can correlate voting no with not spending any hammers. I think voting no is just they don't want culture victory, that is, or somebody going for it.
Uncivilized brutes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Granny, your gears about...
Yeah, that's...
My biggest issue is the turn times. And I know the cause of them. I mean, I work with Brian Wade, who programmed a lot of that. He was the lead on it. And a lot of it boils down to minor factions. The city-states are very expensive. They have that one unit per tile thing and the pathfinding necessary to deal with that, especially late game, especially with those minor civs in the city states. That is very expensive. I wish they had been able to just thread that out or just not have them move as much. I mean, it's gotten a lot better since release, but still, I like to play on large maps, and that's one of the things that really slows it down for me.
Yeah, it's really bad when you see, like, all of the actual AI turns go by in, like, 2 seconds. And then you're just
and then it grinds the whole character pretty states and barbs, and you're just like, oh my god.
30 seconds later, it's like, well, if those guys can make all their decisions, and they have multiple cities.
Yeah.
And in the case of the city states, it's because by the end game, they're practically carpeting their tiles with units.
Well, part of the problem was that I think initially they wouldn't move, and there used to be missions to
construct a road.
Yeah, but originally they used to build the road themselves inside their own territory, and then that stopped for some random reason. Then you had to actually go in, so they threw in a shuffle so that the AI would shuffle its units. But then once you start shuffling, well, then you have to pathfind for everything to shuffle, and that just gets ugly.
And actually related to that, hey, we would like your religion in our city state.
Yeah, that's nice. Have a...
I'm trying to get the... Can I put the unit... Come on, move!
By the way, my religion starts with a nuke. We shall bathe you in the glory of the nuke. Oh, that's the grind of the gear. The rebase animation for three units is not tied to the animation system. That grinds my gears, because if you turn animations off for movement, that does not stop the animation for rebasing air units. So again, late game, air units flying all over the place.
Oh, but hey, not late game. Getting spanned by every other civ by their missionaries. Where is the option like you can tell them to stop spying? Get your freaking missionaries off my lawn and keep them off.
No, you see, you have to let them spread it to you first before you can tell them to stop.
Yeah.
That seems wrong somehow.
So we're just reactive as opposed to being proactive.
They're just asking for forgiveness rather than permission. That's how it works.
Right.
Not for religion. I have a better religion than yours. Quit trying to spread your crap religion than my good one. There's unintentional pressure when it's up against you, but I'm talking about a flood of missionaries and prophets to come to you. It's like, no.
It's always unintentional. Always unintentional.
No, but when I'm on one continent, somebody's on another continent, and because something is going with the thing, I'm not trying to spread the other continent. It's just the pressure is coming from my city to the city state and then jumps over. I'm not trying to do that.
Okay, so fair enough. You don't want to wait for that to happen, Mackie. So I think then you have two choices. One is that you block them with your own units, or two, you declare war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I just said, I started a lot of wars because
thanks for the free great puppet.
Hey, you haven't used it yet. Great, more holy sites for me.
Or if they have used it, and I've done this with the civ workers before, and I know it doesn't affect the AI at all, but I still like to do it, you move the unit right to their border, and then before they can take it, you delete it in front of them.
Oh, that's cool.
It's important that I get satisfaction out of it. The AI doesn't know the difference, but I don't care. I feel better about myself.
I just thought of this. I could go gift it to a city today.
Yeah, you could.
You could.
And then they can just wander around with it and block your tiles.
Hey, if I do it on their continent, it's blocking their tiles.
Yeah, city-states don't settle them or anything like that. They just hold it.
I would say, for me, the city governor and deciding what tiles to...
Oh my gosh, we're suffering on production. I just started a mine on a really great tile, but you will not let go of that two-flute tile.
Oh, governor, I tell you.
You know, there's this ability to select a tile.
Yes.
I was actually thinking more of tile acquisition on border growth.
That too. That one
that is annoying.
Screwed up as hell.
Well, that one, okay. I'll give you
a The citizen management in Civ 5 actually doesn't bother me because as a non-micro wizard coming from Civ 4, it's better. Managing your cities in Civ 4 without the ability to lock tiles so that your growth is otherwise automatically allocated, and then you have like 20 cities instead of 4 to 6. It was a nightmare. You kids these days, you don't know how good it is compared to what it used to be. I know it's bad. I know that the city will pointlessly starve you sometimes, so it's not good, but it is much better than before. So, like, for me, it bothers me a little, but it doesn't reach Grind My Gears level because I remember how horrible it used to be.
And, of course, in the thread, there's the, I'm busy constructing a wonder, and then the turn before it goes away, I'm like, but this is what really grinds your gears in Civ 5, not what really grinds your gears in Civ. That's not a Civ 5 domain, that the wonder that you are constructing is taken the turn before.
That's true.
That's all Civ ever.
That's just a learn to play new moment.
That's not giving a damn editorial.
That's true.
There's also the, I have enough faith to found a religion.
Oh, that one is so freaking
and the next turn, and the next
turn. And 10 turns later, where are the bees?
And then, what do you mean you just founded a religion? How much over were you? No, how much over were you? How much over was I?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
No, it's the, I have enough to found a religion. Great. 10 turns later, 5 religions have been founded.
Yeah.
I don't have enough to found a religion.
Oh, and then it's no more religions can be
founded.
Oh.
Yeah.
Screw you.
Ah, yeah.
Could you make the over-under on the extra turns be, like, less than 5?
Like, flipping the table time.
Yeah.
The heavy table.
Be very happy table that normally you can't move.
Okay, that's it. I'm out. That RNG, I don't know why, seriously, I don't understand why that was RNG'd at all for the first two Great Prophets. It just annoys me to no end.
You know what? I think that's just trying to add realism into gameplay.
We should. We've had this discussion before.
Neither of these implementations are in any way indicative of reality, but we chose this one because it's realistic. What?
Enjoy, everybody. All right, so this is a topic for Civ 6, which Brad has already, you know, pre-approved the existence.
Announced, so we can talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, we're all running the beta, right? I mean,
yeah. Of course.
Of course.
So it may be I just can't that. Believe they made it real time. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's Galfit 3, right? That's the beta?
Yeah.
Real time Civ 6.
Okay, so there might be a Civ 6, and there might be combat workers, because MC Assault. In real life, combat engineers were being used during many time periods and yada, yada, yada. Long pause on that.
Oh, what are you, Elaine?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You want to know if we can use some sort of combat worker-ish that can do frontline special improvements, stuff like that, see the whole logistical slash civil engineering stuff, and specialized, basically it's a very specialized unit for the game. Now, granted, he makes mention that this is supposed to be a combat worker, but it would have equal strength to the weakest non-armored unit in the player's army, which at least for Civ 5 generally means equal power to the armored unit, or at least a close enough, so I would say let's make it a civilian unit, or like half the power, because he's talking about like not being able to stand these things and use them for cheap fighting. So yeah, you'd have to like make sure that it's not even remotely considered an actual military unit. Otherwise, combat workers can build and remove most of the improvements in one turn.
Woo!
Yeah, that's it's fast.
that's a little whoa.
Now, granted, the things that combat workers in real life build tend not to last more than the amount of time it was required to put it there.
Yeah, but if you try to build in a decay for that, that would just, you talk about the turns taking too long now.
Yeah. But, you know, like things like building a pontoon bridge across a river so that troops can go across without slowing down, that would be a combat worker thing.
That would be good.
One of the things that John's doing in Massive Gates is that you have to start out with before cities. Where you are dealing with tribes, and you have to actually go and get enough people to get that first city going. And I would love to see Civ kind of go a little bit further back, where you're hunting and gathering, and you're having to build up a little bit before you even found that first city.
Well, and MCA is kind of getting to that, because he says that in his suggestion, the combat worker can be built starting in the classical era or equivalent to the 5 tech era. So when I see that, and also combined with that they can build, as well as remove most of their improvements in one turn, I'm thinking, wow, why don't I just go ahead and declare war on this civilization over there, and then I can have my my workers be combat workers, and away we go.
Yeah, his general concept would be, through the eras, basically you have camps or medical stations or military bases or improvised airfields, things people have wanted for a long time. So stuff like that where it's basically, it's got defenses and you can heal there a little better and that sort of thing. And that makes sense. Like if you have a worker go and even in other people's territory, build a little base and says, okay, here you go. You can heal here a little bit better as if it was your own. And guard towers apparently. So that range units can get extra sight. The only thing I question on this is the wooden wall and the stone or great wall. Pretty sure China didn't build the great wall in a turn and it took a very, very long time to get it done.
Yeah.
Although he says 2 turns for the Great Wall.
That's twice as long, Matt.
Dude.
Ooh, a whole like, turn.
In that time period in the game, though, that is a few decades. And it's not nearly as long as the actual Great Wall in China, so.
Yeah. Oh, and we actually don't know how long the standard game of Civ 6 is going to be. Maybe it's only 50 turns.
Yeah, that's true. That's it. There you go. No, anyways. building wooden walls and stone walls with combat engineers. These are on the map, not related to the city. So these are actual taking improvements, which to me, I think I like that concept because we did that in history.
I like it. It's good.
Yeah.
Well, I like just a little farther ahead about the improvised airfield because I immediately saw back to Civilization IV. That was great. It's like, okay, I've got these airplanes and, oh, I don't have any coast. Okay, so I can't put it on a ship and I want to bombard. Okay, let's put it in an airfield. Oh, wait, no, that's okay. I'll put it in this city and it's, I'm sorry, it's one hex out of range of the... Oh.
Yeah.
I did actually
there
would always be like a one tile or one hexagon. You could have put one on that was off the coast. It would have been great.
You eventually get some minefields and stuff like that as well.
I like the medical station idea. That's like a mobile hospital type of thing.
Yeah. But the weird part is like medical hospital and repair station used to repair these things. The enemy can also use it. What?
If they capture it. Like if they move into that province.
Just that's fine.
Or,
yeah, if you capture it. But it's like, I'm building a medical station. I'll heal everybody.
Well, I think the abstraction would be reasonable that you captured their dudes, and now they're using their supplies.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
Look, unless we're starting to introduce aliens into the game, and we choose one medical station. I said Brad would approve. Yes.
The other thing in his suggestions that I'm not sure I like is the city-based ones, like the old oil cauldrons. Having a unit walk into a city to build something seems a little weird when you can just tell the city to build it itself as a defensive building. But otherwise, the concept of having a combat worker, an actual unit that wanders around building forward stuff, like camps and things like that, very plausible. I mean, it's an idea. The only question is, how big is your map? Smaller maps, that could get really ugly pretty quick, especially if you're ripping up other people's improvements.
Oh, yeah, the concept. I like the concept as well. There are just some minor parts about his suggestions, or her, implementations that we take issue with. But that's pretty minor in the grand scheme of things. I mean, he's put some considerable thought into this. He thought about not only is it a good concept because there's realism, but here's how it could work in gameplay. And, yeah, I mean, even some of this, regardless of what a Civilization VI becomes, even some of this, I could actually see this in Civilization V, and I'm on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or way down there, Aussie Hucker is thrown in. They're like, a use for them in peacetime could be building trade forts, i.e. building a fort in a neutral territory. You can connect it with trade routes. That sort of concept would be cool. You might have to think and do math for how far you can get with it and multi-staged trade routes.
But... Ooh, thinking is okay, but does it have to be math? I mean,
I don't know.
I don't want it.
Doing math in your head is the best part of games.
You get your wrinkles.
To stop and pull out the spreadsheet to do all your work. Hold on, people. I'll be back. Gonna do my work.
Should be a tooltip for everything.
Yes, a tooltip comes up with a spreadsheet in a tooltip.
This tooltip will explain to you what actions you can take that will most greatly annoy the other players in the game.
By the way, opening this tooltip, like again.
Tooltip, how to calculate how much pressure is required to smash your monitor when you get angry.
Press this button to do a denial of service attack on Dan.
There's feedback for episode 227.
Shaglio is saying, first started discussing optimal teams to gang up on the AI. His first thought was Mongolia and Songhai. Reason being that the ranged attack of the Kesheks coupled with the Mandekalu cavalry would be able to just sweep across the map. And while they certainly could, like I said in the thread, I don't see the advantage because if you've taken a city down to no strength, you can take it with basically anything, including just a random horseman or whatever. So, like, I don't think that those cavalry would particularly speed up your progress or be stronger than just doing something that makes the Kesheks better or the camel archers better or just throwing a horse archer sooner or whatever. It doesn't strike me as particularly outstanding in that regard, which is why I responded the way I did in thread.
Yeah, no, I basically agree. If you're going for two UAs at the exact same tech, which seems like an idea, but yeah, if you've already got Kesheks or Camel Archers, then you really don't need many because you can just use scouts at that point.
Yeah. Although having something with more moves is nice.
It is nicer. You could just
use it. You could just use like a knight or a horseman and be able to still take a 0-hit-point city or a 1-hit-point city mm-hmm. without too much trouble.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
That's basically the premise of Galactic Civilizations, is that built your ship in Civ, and now you're going to go out and colonize the planets.
Yeah, I remember the campaign. It was good.
You played the campaign?
Yeah. No, I'm not talking Delta 3. I don't think I'm going to bother with that garbage. No, the campaign. I'm not talking about your game. Like, your game is garbage. I didn't just say Delta 3 sucks. No, Delta 3 is actually more about the multiplayer and like the not campaign stuff.
Big thing in Galactic Civilization 3 is just the scale of it. You can have 100 opponents in a single-player game, 100 AI players going against you if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hearing it. Imagine think that Galactic Civilization 3 has something in common with Call of Duty. It's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. I would say Galactic Civilization 3 is as much of a multiplayer game, I guess, as Civilization 5, which is to say around 1.5% of the player base will probably play.
Oh, I thought you meant that you're basically saying it's not going to work.
The Call of Duty analogy,
Call of Duty analogy.
There you go, Brad. Galactic Civilization 3, Call of Duty in space.
Biggest selling title ever.
Yeah, I don't think the Call of Duty fan base would exactly like playing a turn-based strategy game, but we've heard that does that.
I'm just picturing the little kid trash talk in the framework of a Galactic game right now.
There's an important qualification here, Brad.
That'd be amazing.
Brad, they don't have to like playing it, they just have to buy it.
That is true. That is true.
Gospel asks, why not bring up some news on an upcoming title called Civ 6?
And well, the thing is, they haven't told us crap about it yet, so we can't tell you crap about it yet.
Ooh, but I'm just saying. Like,
although, if we keep the new Roman numeral, we can have Civvy. It could look like Civvy all the time. I'm going to play Civvy guy.
Oh, play it in your Civvy?
Oh, yeah. How do you do that?
Oh, my God. That's yes.
Show dog already. Look at that. That's perfect.
Play in your Civvies. You don't have to be Commando anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you still can't
feel it.
Well, you can, but... You know.
We brought Gospel the Truth, because Brad is here, and Brad knows all about Civ 6.
Yeah, we're right.
Anyway, this is Polycast 228. I'm Masterful as usual, and with me, of course, is Dan.
Brad will be replacing Mad Jin next episode.
Mad Jin.
Thanks, everybody.
You agree with me, so you are obviously correct.
And our guest this week, who is not going to be the new co-host, Brett Ford.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was fun.
Which may or may not be an insult, depending upon the disposition.
Maybe they like it.
Now, there are a lot of things that people like that others don't.
Yeah, but what really grinds your gears?
Well, that might be some things that people like and others don't.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait, that's kind of right.
How many segues can we throw at Brad before he picks it up?
All of them.
I don't know. Let's all get the physical segue and throw it at your head.
Ow.
That would be slightly expensive.
How far can you throw a segue, Dan?
Well, Are we into the grinding your gears about,
Yeah, that's what we've been...
Yeah, the gears of the Segway will be grinded against the skull.
What do you guys think about the combat worker?
Oh, we're moving to the next topic right on.
You guys still want to rip on Civ 5?
Sure. Compression. I'm going to the complimentary.
Yeah, well, something that grinds your gears isn't necessarily a rip on the game.
So you can just, like, edit bread segue in there so that I don't have to actually make a new one.
Yeah. I could, but should I?
Benefits for post-editing.
Record date?
May 16th, 2015.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth Census. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.